Welcome back to the old switcheroo. We're talking gaming retro with Mike and JMO.
I'm Mike.
And I'm JMO. Today we are tackling a topic for the episode that episode number three that I am calling Mustachioed Quarter Munchers. We are going to be, over the course of this podcast, trying to play and critique every retro game available to people who are subscribed to Nintendo Switch Online. There's over 200 of them, so we've divided them up into little subcategories. And specifically, this one is Arcade Puzzler, but I had to come up with a clever title than Arcade Puzzler, so I came up with Mustachioed Quarter Munchers. And Mike, I'm just going to guess you already have a problem with the title, am I right?
I mean, yeah, I do not think there's mustaches on most of these.
We're going to get to that, I promise. So the three games we're talking about is Mario Brothers on the NES, Dig Dug 2 Trouble in Paradise, also on the NES, and Burger Time Deluxe on the Game Boy. So Mike, any prior experience with any of these games?
So Mario Brothers, I have played at some point in time, in some form, and I'm not sure what.
And we should clarify right out the gate, this is not Super Mario Brothers. This is not the game that most people think when they think of Mario Brothers. This is the arcade puzzle game where your goal is to just clear a single screen of enemies. So you play that, you can't really put your finger on where. What about Dig Dug or Burger Time?
Well, to look behind the curtain, this was on the spreadsheet as just Dig Dug, and I was excited.
I know.
And this is Dig Dug 2, Trouble in Paradise, which feels like a subtitle that came out of the 80s, like in a comedy movie.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, not a comedy movie part, but it is a subtitle from the 80s.
So I thought I was well prepared for that one because I really like Dig Dug. Right. And we will get to why that was not preparation for this game.
Yeah.
And then Burger Time Deluxe, I feel like I have encountered Burger Time in some format at some point in time as well, but I'm not sure if I have or if just that's a distinct enough thing that like I've seen it and that was enough.
Well, so, you know, if anyone ever doubts your gaming chops, I think it's a good time to mention that you had an Atari back in the day and you had quite the collection of Atari games. We used to play it, and this is back in the, you know, 32-bit era, we'd still fire up Combat and Adventure on your Atari. And I think you might have had Burger Time on your Atari.
I don't think I did.
No? Doesn't strike you as something?
I would have stronger memories if that was one of them.
Okay. Well, so I had Burger Time on my mom's Intellivision. Did you ever see an Intellivision in the wild or really know what it is?
Not in the slightest.
It's part of the gaming boom before the E.T. game for the Atari basically crashed the entire industry. It was one of the most hyped games of all time, and they published so many copies, but the game was truly terrible because the poor guy designing it had about 2 or 3 months to make the entire game. That shook the industry so much that the field of competitors went from dozens of people making game systems to basically just Nintendo, Sega, eventually, you know, Sony, Microsoft. But Intellivision was one of these also-rans. And it was interesting because it was a color game system, which was pretty rare at the time. And you played it with like television remotes, you know, like with like nine, I guess it was more like a phone. You had like nine different buttons, kind of like a phone pad, and then like a little dial at the top. So that's how I used to play Burger Time. So let's kind of get into each of these as we have them released in chronological order. I don't know how you'd release something not in chronological order. That'd be impressive. We're going to start off with Mario Brothers. Mario Brothers, from the description on Nintendo Switch Online, released in 1986 by Nintendo. Mario and Luigi are doing some underground plumbing when all sorts of strange creatures come flying out of the pipes. Help the two brothers clear stages by collecting coins and avoiding getting hit by enemies. Crabs, turtles, and fighter flies must be cleared out by jumping underneath the platforms they're standing on and then kicking them away. But beware, just when you think you got rid of them, they come back for more. Play alone or with a friend. Either way, this is one underground classic you will want to play time and time again. Mario Brothers was really directed by Shigeru Miyamoto, who developed the tennis game we played in one of our previous episodes. And this is a nice opportunity to talk about Gunpei Yokoi. I think I might be saying the first name slightly off there. Are you familiar with this name, Mike?
No.
He is the creator of Game & Watch, which was kind of an LCD sort of Nintendo console we'll be talking about eventually, because the games are collected on one of these cartridges, or I should say digital cartridges we're going to be playing. But he was also the inventor of the Game Boy, and what I think is his greatest contribution to video gaming, the cross-directional pad, or as we know it, a D-pad. This guy invented that thing, and it's hard to imagine gaming without the D-pad, because of course, you know, it gave way to the joystick and just made it so that you could control a game with your thumb instead of with your whole hand. So his contribution to the gaming industry is really huge. I've got some trivia.
Did he that for working for Nintendo?
Yeah.
Okay, so Nintendo chose to have the arc of switching to you can control with just your thumb instead of your whole hand, just to go back to, no, let's bring the whole hand back into this again, and then we're surprised that wasn't successful.
Well, and then, you know, you also think about the Wii, right? Where it's like, let's bring our whole body. Let's have motion controls. Nintendo is always trying to innovate in ways that they control their games, and, you know, all the way back here to the 80s. So for our trivia section, knowledge is power, superpower, I've got some trivia here for you, Mike. I tried to stay away from things that I think most people know, but I wanted to mention that Mario's first appearance is a little different than I originally thought of it as. It's pretty common knowledge. Do you know what Mario's first game was?
I had thought it was Donkey Kong.
Right. It is Donkey Kong. Now, he was known as Jumpman in that game. But I was surprised to learn today in researching for this episode that in Donkey Kong, Mario was not a plumber. He was a carpenter, which when you think about it, that makes a lot more sense, because that level's game design, or that game's level design, I should say, it's like you're on a construction site.
And I'm Donkey surprised Kong was, he wasn't a Cooper.
What do Coopers do?
Coopers make barrels.
Oh, I feel like I knew that in the back of my head. Well, so my source listed as carpenter, but I mean, Cooper does kind of make a lot more sense and almost plays into the whole Koopa Troopa sort of thing. So when
there's
designing
a whole alternate lore that they could have gone with here.
Every episode you mentioned that there's some fan game in the works or alternate lore. Yeah, what if Mario made barrels instead of unclogging toilets? So when designing Mario Brothers, which was, of course, you know, a pseudo sequel to Donkey Kong, Shigeru Miyamoto thought to change his profession to a plumber because it better matched the setting of this game's piped levels. And interesting enough, he thought the overalls and the mustache made him think plumber. And like, overall, sure. But do you associate mustaches with plumbing at all?
I mean, I don't not associate it with them. At this point, the case may well be that I associate it with plumbers because of Mario.
100%. 100%. So do you know who Mario's named after?
This is the story that it's like a landlord.
Yes. So this is from a 2018 obituary printed in the New York Times. The name of Nintendo's mascot changed from Jumpman to Mario when Nintendo of America's landlord, Mario Segale, I hope I'm saying that right, burst into a staff meeting demanding rent. And I like to imagine that they offered to name the character after him because they didn't have the rent that day. I'm totally making that up, but I think it adds a little juice to the backstory. And
do you think their previous landlord, Mr. Jumpman, was disappointed?
Mr. Jump. Okay. All right. Take it easy there. Let's leave the Jumpman family alone. I'm sure they've been through a lot. And so do you know if I had to ask you, if you had to guess, why turtles? Why were turtles the central antagonists of this game?
I mean, they're well known for being in sewers.
Are they? I thought that was just a Ninja Turtles thing. Wait a minute. I think my world just got a little larger. Was Ninja Turtles a thing because there were already turtles in sewers?
I was just going for the Ninja Turtles joke.
Oh, okay. You let me go on for a while on that one. So
I thought you might figure out that.
Nah. So turtles were the essential antagonists of this game because of the mechanic of the game. In fact, I'll go to a screenshot here I took during my playthrough. The main, in fact, really the only way you combat enemies in this game is you have to travel to the level below them and then jump up, punching the ceiling, which sends the opponent standing on that platform flying up and then onto their back. And then after they've been knocked over in this way, then you can run into them and kick them off the stage. So turtles were the central antagonist because Shigeru Miyamoto thought that a turtle is an enemy that you could only defeat from below. So this like makes sense for the gameplay mechanic. And that's funny for two reasons to me. Is one is that Koopas are like such an icon in the Mario franchise. And so it's funny to think that if not for this exact gameplay mechanic, it would have been like some other animal. But do you know what I find funny about this assumption that we have to make it turtles because you can only defeat turtles from below? Do you see the humor in that logic?
Yeah, because everything after this, you just distinctly defeat them from above. Like, you I think I died them, pretty yeah. quick in this
yeah.
because how, I thought that could work.
How many times did you have to stop yourself from jumping on a Koopa? It's like it's ingrained in us. And I think that that really speaks to just how ubiquitous and how sort of universal Mario games have become. We instinctually know, yeah, you jump on Koopas. And also, you know, did you also really want to hit other turtles once you kicked the stunned turtle away? I really wanted that chain reaction you get in the later Mario games, and I was really missing it in this one.
I was hopeful that was going to work because I was not doing well. I needed anything that was going to give me an advantage.
Yeah.
So I didn't find myself missing it, but that would have been nice. Just like I said, I needed the edge on that.
Yeah. So taking a look at the box art, you know, the North American release for NES has the basic pixel art cover. It's basically just a, you know, screenshot of actual gameplay footage, which Michael, let you finish this Simpsons quote, which is Abe Simpson would say,
was the style of the time.
Yes! Oh, that was unrehearsed. I alley-ooped it. You got it. Yes. This is just like the tennis cover where it's just, you know, picture of the gameplay. And
although, yeah, to that point, I would like to point out, because we just discussed the turtles can only be killed from below or whatever.
And clearly here you see him about to jump on a turtle.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't realize it, but how many other covers are of the main character about to die?
About to die, and also like low-key giving bad advice to the person about to play the game.
I mean, death usually is.
Yeah, sure. No, not in every game. So then we have the Atari, which is just also really interesting, you know, to see a Mario game on a system that's not a Nintendo system. This is before Nintendo was strictly exclusive with their IP. And I like the Atari cover. I don't know about you, but I love when games show you, you know, what you're going to be doing in it. And
Luigi creeps me out. But other than that,
I mean, I think Luigi's creepy in his cover because he just looks exactly like Mario. It doesn't look like Luigi to us. It looks like Mario cosplaying as Luigi.
Yeah, like, but it's definitely that. Like, it's not like this isn't some weird uncanny valley. It's just that's supposed to be Luigi. That's not what Luigi looks like anymore.
And I also find it funny, and I don't know if it's from this cover, but there's a little detail about the cover that kind of gives me a chuckle. Do you see it? It's kind of there in the center.
No.
Look at their caps. Can you not see it on your screen?
I mean,
it's their names written along the brim of the cap, Mario and Luigi. And it's almost like, I don't know if you were a kid and, you know, you shared clothes with siblings, but like when you wanted to mark something as yours, you'd like write your name in Sharpie on the brim. And, you know, this would eventually, this concept would become the M and the L on their caps.
Which,
and
in a sense, doesn't make sense from that origin because they're already sorting it out because Mario wears his trademark blue and right. Luigi is in his trademark green.
But I like, though, you say trademark blue, but Mario's cap is red, you know, by modern definitions. And then it's even stranger that on the North American box art, he's got blue on blue. It just looks so wrong to me. He's wearing denim with a denim undershirt. Like, come on, that's too much blue. That's as my wife would call it, when I wear too much blue, I look like Leonardo the Blueberry. I look like Leonardo DiCaprio mixed with a blueberry. So come on, Mario, too much blue. So what was your impression playing the original Mario Brothers arcade game?
Actually, I'm just going to say, now that I think about it, that looks less like Mario on the Nintendo cover than it does feel like it's really a game starring David Crosby from Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Oh, I wish I got your reference. I would really love to alley-oop your reference like you did to mine, but that's a musician, right?
Yes.
Okay. I only know that because of the Metalocalypse episode where they're... wow, stumbled through that word. The Metalocalypse episode where Nathan Explosion and Squizgar teasing Murderface, you know, kind of taunting him, saying he can't write a song. He's like, okay, let's go. Let's go Simon and Garfunkel. And then Squizgar's like, yes, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. He's like, why am I always two people? Okay, this was just an excuse to do my Metalocalypse impressions. Mike, talk about Mario Brothers. Get us back on topic here. What did you think of this game?
First of all, I'm very bad at this game.
Okay.
I think...
We saw that. We played this two-player mode right before we recorded.
People don't need to know that there's witnesses to that.
Sorry.
I do think that part of what throws me is that jumping is useless.
I mean, you have to jump, though.
Yeah. The Aqua Teen Force kind of worked its way in there. It's that the jumping is so limited in how much you're... It really is, and you know, this is how reality works, so fair play. Like, when you hit jump, at the point where you've done that, the rest of that jump is pretty much predetermined.
Right. Your jumps have a set arc like they do in real life, whereas opposed to every other Mario game after this, you can control yourself in midair, which is how platforming games became, you know, possible.
Yeah. So there's a whole lot of moments of me missing that, and then just knowing that I got to watch the rest of this jump fail.
Right.
Which, if I'm lucky, it's just that, like, I didn't have quite enough momentum and I meant to jump to the side and I just jump straight up. If I'm unlucky, I have landed on an enemy.
Now, I find it interesting that you use the word momentum, because that's one of the things I liked about this game is, and maybe it's because you couldn't control your jumps. And when Mario is running and then you need to do an about face and run away because an enemy is coming right at you, you know, he sort of skids a little bit as his momentum shifts from one direction to the other. And in later levels, when the Freezies show up, those are the ice enemies. Did you get to those?
Not a chance.
Oh, you were really bad at this game. Well, you know what? I shouldn't criticize you that much, because, again, for those of you who aren't aware of the premise of the show, Mike is trying to be a retro... Mike is trying to game retro. I'm going to get that straight one of these days. And by that, it means that whereas I am going to use save states and rewind functionality while playing the emulated games on Nintendo Switch Online, Mike is going at it as if he was in the 80s, which means that he doesn't save unless the game lets him save. He doesn't restart unless it's baked into the game. So I probably would have struggled a lot if I hadn't been rewinding to retime my jumps. But when things work out well, when you flip an enemy just in time so that it obstructs the path of a different enemy, and then a coin bounces off that enemy and into you, and you're just sort of jumping around and dodging and weaving, it feels really cool. It feels out of control, I think, in kind of a fun way. I think sometimes it can add to a sense of danger if you can't control your character super well. I know this is a bizarre comparison, but it makes me think of the first Resident Evil games, because you didn't have full control over your environment, and so it added some tension.
It is weird that you can basically compare it a rail game to be a game that's sort of off the rails.
Yeah, more or less.
And certainly, like, the momentum stuff, like, I get, it's more just that was a tough thing to be good at.
Yeah, it just didn't click with you is what you're saying.
Yeah, like it's I may have gotten better in time.
I always forgot to use the POW block. So at the very bottom of every level, and that's definitely one of the, you know, if we're talking about Joy pros versus Joy cons, one of the cons of this game is that the level layout never changes. Like, there's a slight difference in texture where it's like, ooh, these are blocks versus these are pipes. And I think one of them makes it look like they're like made out of wood. It's the same level layout. So the only variation from level to level is what enemies come out of the pipes at you. but there's only four types of enemies. And there are 99 levels in this game, or as this game calls them, phases. But in doing my research, I came to learn from people talking about it in, you know, forums, there's actually only 14 levels that the game loops through over and over until you reach 100. And Mike, do you know what happens when you beat this game and you beat phase 99?
Let's go with you start back at level one.
Yeah, start back at level one, which was an arcade thing back in the 80s. But it's just not even a congratulations, not even a sound cue. It's just like they hadn't programmed that. This was purely just a quarter muncher designed to just entertain you. And I mean, I found the game kind of addicting.
That was just it. Goodbye and good luck.
I found it addicting until I realized that it wasn't really going to change that much. There were definitely some cool parts of the gameplay. I like that since you have to hit the enemy from below, there's sort of a satisfying sense in like setting a trap. You know, you're sort of laying in wait to flip an enemy over. And then once an enemy is flipped over, they're stunned, but their stunned body will now deflect oncoming enemies. So you can now use them as like a shield. And I just thought there was kind of a lot of nuance to a game that I thought was pretty simplistic. I easily had the most fun playing with you. What did you, how did you think the two-player mode compared to playing it by yourself?
I do find it fascinating that I don't think this game ever decided if two-player was meant to be versus or co-op. Like, you can't kill one another, but, oh, you can ruin this for one another.
Yeah.
And it's separate scores.
Yeah, your scores are separate. And, you know, since the game doesn't really have an ending, I don't really think it has much draw outside of being competitive. You know, you versus me, let's see who can get the high score. And but even then, though, like you said, that's so easy to accidentally kill each other. If we were playing versus, what would you think, who would win? Whoever survives longer or who has the higher score? Because those are different things.
Oh, I'm imagining that in versus, you should actually be able to jump up and hit the person above you, and then they end up flipped up upside down for a little bit.
That would actually be kind of a rad little death match. Because one of the things I like about this game is it has, I always just called it Pac-Man mechanics, but I guess the exact term is wraparound, where if you run off the right-hand side of the screen, you'll reappear on the left-hand side. It's like the whole thing is like a cylinder and you're just running around the outside of it. And, you know, same thing goes for your enemies. So it'd be amazing to be trying to sabotage your opponents, you know, flip them upside down, stun them just right before a crab comes and gets them. But, you know, alas, it was not to be. And, you know, my cons, like you said, the controls can be a bit unresponsive. You know, level nail never changes, and there's not a whole lot of incentive to beat the game. So did you have anything else to say about this game before we go to the next one?
Yeah, I'm just going to, I'm going to forewarn, there's going to be a theme here called Mike has other games that are like this, but he likes better.
Okay, so what game would you recommend? I'm guessing, you know, we'll jump the gun a little bit. Or maybe we should save that for our recommendations. Do you want to save that for our Nintendo versus Nintendo?
I'm going to keep it relevant to this because this is stuff that I don't think is on Nintendo, but this is just other arcade games that I enjoy more that this reminds me of.
Which yeah.
Just the feel of this makes me feel like this is a lesser Joust.
Right. So Joust, for those unfamiliar with it, it's kind of like this where you have like a platforms that are set and you're riding around. It's such a cool premise. I mean, I just want to see a movie made out of Joust. You're riding around these on top of these ostriches, and like they can fly. Now, I don't know. I mean, real ostriches, they can fly, right?
No, they can't. Good Lord, they can't. They're giant.
Well, okay. I said that wrong. I meant like prehistoric ostriches. Like at some point, like they evolved to lose the ability to fly.
I mean, yes, when they became so big they couldn't.
So you ride around on ostriches that can fly, and you have you joust with, what's that called, a lance?
Yeah.
And your goal is to fly into other riders and peg them, and it's the sense of momentum is much better. You control every flap of your little steed. And I would agree that Joust is a better game than this.
There's still the momentum kind of things, and it's still sort of a you have to come at the enemy from the right way.
Right.
But like, and it very much has that wraparound screen thing. So it is the I am going very fast one way, picking up speed. And I think because it's a little bit more open, this felt like I was hitting into things a lot more than I wanted to, because you're very limited in where you can change levels.
Yeah.
And you have to time those jumps just right. Whereas Joust is a little bit more of, you can be good at it or you can be very good at it, but it didn't quite feel just like it failed or it didn't.
Yeah, Joust, to play Joust in games more like that, it feels more like a sport. Whereas this is sort of like, I don't want to say luck of the draw, but you're definitely in less control of what's happening in a bad way.
Yeah.
Well, so let's move on then to the second game, or what might be the most disappointing game for you, because when we're planning out this podcast, you know, we're trying to divide up all 200 some games into little episodes for your guys' enjoyment. And I honestly thought this was Dig Dug. Dig Dug is kind of a pretty beloved arcade game. There's a screenshot of it for you, where your goal is to dig, and you dig down and you have to use your oxygen tank, which I assume you're using to breathe underground. It is also a weapon. You can spear it into enemies and then pump them full of air until they pop like a balloon. And there's also rocks wedged into the soil, and if you dig underneath the rock, it can fall and crush you or an enemy if you trap them properly. It's a pretty recognizable game, I would say. You said you were a fan of Dig Dug. When did you, or where did you play it?
Oh, I'm fairly positive I played this as the arcade version.
Yeah.
I think I played it additionally on something else, but I played this as an arcade game.
And, you know, it was one of those arcade games that, if it was a decent arcade, you know, the average pizza shop might not have this, but if you were at a bigger arcade or like a barcade as popular these days, your chances of seeing a Dig Dug machine is, I would say, pretty good. It was very, very popular. Let me read the description, however, for today's game, Dig Dug 2, released in 1986 by Bandai Namco. We've talked about them before. They are the ones who released Tekken and Elden Ring. And the description reads, help Dig Dug rid the island of vacation crashing intruders. Dig Dug has decided to take a vacation on a remote island, but the Pooka and Figar won't give him a chance to rest. In each round, clear out the enemies by inflating them until they burst or by digging up traps for them to fall into. But be careful that you don't get too close to their attacks or fall into your own traps. Now that, to me, Mike, sounds like a description of Dig Dug. Like, especially the second part about, like, making your enemies fall into traps. You don't do that in Dig Dug 2. You can set traps, but they're not falling. I guess they're falling into the trap in the metaphorical sense, but they're not physically falling down pits.
I mean, you're falling into water.
Right. So I didn't realize this until playing through the game the second time. I played for almost 20 minutes and did not realize essentially the central mechanic of the game. So unlike the previous Dig Dug, this one is from an isometric top-down perspective. And there's a screenshot right here of what one of the levels kind of looks like. And you can still use your oxygen tank to spear enemies and inflate them and pop them. But there's also these stakes wedged into the ground that you can use to create fault lines. And like, if you look over on the left-hand side of the screen, you see, you know, looks, the fault lines are like little black lines running across the map. And what's cool about that mechanic, I thought, was that you can walk across the fault lines, but your enemies cannot. So you can create these little barriers to manage the swarm of enemies coming towards you. And if you connect the fault lines, that part of the level will break off into the ocean, sinking and killing any enemy, and also potentially killing yourself. So it is a radically different game mechanic than the first one. But I watched a very fascinating YouTube video from someone on YouTube called Golden Bolt. And he was talking about how at the time, game designers were afraid to make a sequel that was too like the original. And that if you didn't deviate, then arcade goers might think your release is boring and just walk on to the next machine. What did you think of the new Dig Dug 2 mechanics versus the old one? I think I have a feeling what you're going to say, but what'd you think?
First of all, sequel-wise, is this after the point where they decided that you can make a sequel by just putting a bow on your main character and then kind of going for it?
Are you referring to Ms. Pac-Man?
Yes.
Yeah, there was a Pac-Man was a beast unto itself. Okay. I mean, Pac-Man was so successful that they were able to get people to buy new cabinets by very cheap cosmetic differences. So this is not obviously true. Ms. Pac-Man is the exception that proves the rule. And I hate that saying, but it seems to apply here.
All right. I think my problem here is the Dig Dug game loop is very satisfying.
Yeah.
You dig around, which doesn't require anything. It's just your motion to make the tunnels. And then you blow up, quite literally, your enemies.
Yeah.
Here, they didn't seem to know what they wanted to do with that. And so I don't think this really has the sense of a central game loop. It is two competing game loops going on. And so I think with that, the issue that I end up having with that is I kind of don't know how I'm supposed to be playing this, because the old approach doesn't work as well when they have this much free motion and just isn't as satisfying. And the new approach is these fault lines that I'm much more interested in just playing with those. So like the first level, if you bait them a little bit, you can get rid of all the monsters in one go.
Yeah, you just break the fault lines at the perfect places, and it's really satisfying because the entire island, except for the tiny part where you're standing, just crashes into the ocean. And it's like,
it's got to be the larger part that you're on, because you can totally be on the wrong side of that and not expect it, and that's very annoying.
Is it always the game's fault?
That's just it did that to me, where it was like, oh, I'll split this one off. There's one dead. I'll split the next corner off, another one. Split the third corner off. And then by the time we reached the fourth corner, the centerpiece was now smaller than the remaining limb of the island.
Right. And so it's a mechanic that the smaller piece is always what sinks?
It seems to be.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. I feel like from a storytelling and like, you know, kind of physics standpoint. Although I do admit, I did feel a little guilty storytelling-wise about these islands. I mean, I guess, yeah, they're invading you. If we're going to go by the Trouble in Paradise subtitle, they won't let you relax, but you're destroying the island.
Like, I will also point out that this isn't how islands actually work.
Right. Yeah. They're not floating, you know?
Yeah. And I think I kind of, because it also has like the blow them up mechanic, I could see if this was a more puzzle game thing where it was more about how should you fracture this? But because it's got the competing things, it never really does either well. It kind of feels like really what this game kind of wants to be is, if you're familiar with a game that I think is pronounced Kix.
I believe that's a cereal, Mike. And something that other kids have if they're pumped up.
Yeah. So it's...
Come on.
I'm not sure how to pronounce this because it's spelt with a Q. It's Q-I-X. And in that... you're basically trying to claim as much of the field as you are by dividing it up into
pieces. I got
to
look at this. Q-I-X.
Yes.
That's a musician. Kix game.
Yeah, it's this whole thing of you're trying to divide that up while avoiding some... there's some stuff that bounces around inside that you're trying to avoid. But so it's this idea of how do you divide this up to claim as much of it as you can without getting hit, is the very basic summary of it. But it felt like this is kind of what I'm trying to do with these faults, of how can I divide these faults up the best way, but I'm kind of constrained in how to do it, and I'm having to worry about this entire other game loop of attack and inflate. And so I'm like, well, if I could lean into that, I'd have more fun. If this was closer to the original Dig Dug, I'd have fun. This middle ground just kind of underwhelms me.
Yeah. Well, so let me read a caption. And by the way, I just looking it up, Kix is on the Switch for $8 if you really love that game. So the Golden Bolt YouTube channel was talking about how this Dig Dug 2 was not a successful sequel, and it's largely forgotten by time. It actually was re-released almost nowhere. It was kind of hard to find in North America until the Nintendo Switch Online service added it. So it's sort of interesting little curio. But in his video, I just had to quote this and read it out loud because it's gold. He says he can't, this is Golden Boat talking on his video, from MMO to divorced dad, the wild world of Dig Dug games. The host is quoted as saying, I can't imagine how many kids ended up disappointed with this being the game your unknowing parents threw under the tree on Christmas. It's probably not many, since I don't think the NES game sold that well, but there's probably still one of you out there. And that pivotal moment in your life is probably what ruined your future and led to your wife leaving you 30 years later. It's like, what?
Here's a question.
Yes.
Since you looked into this, and I'm hoping there's an answer.
Yes.
Is there a reason that the levels often appear to be letters, and do those spell anything out? Because I try to find, just like, does anyone, can I just find these levels? Because I start noticing, like, wait a minute, that's an A, that's an X. Is this spelling a thing?
Yeah, I got irrationally worried I was accidentally going to form a swastika. Like, I genuinely felt nervous about that. So, like, it seems like there are shapes built in. Like, one of the levels is clearly, like, a key. And in one of the levels I finished, and it was, like, a perfect cross was finished by the time I killed all the enemies. So, I don't know. I didn't find that in my research, if there's some logic or pattern to, you know, what the levels are made to look like.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that's just letters or easy shapes, or if that actually was something going on here.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm wondering if you found, did you have much suicide in your game?
As in accidentally falling into the ocean?
As in what looked like very purposeful jumping into the ocean by the enemy.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Okay, I had this, and I had this actually happen, I think, 3 levels in a row for reasons I don't understand. Okay. Where it's like, I would be down to the last one, and then I would be off on one part of the map, and it would just jump off the side.
And the level would end?
Yeah, and it would be over, because it's like, it would just, and I'm like, I don't think you can even fall off, and I'm watching them, you know, I'm winning levels because, or clearing levels, because they're jumping off the side.
That's weird, because one of my joy pros of this game was that I liked this mechanic where when a level starts to run long, you hear this little alarm go up. And in all the other games I play, or not all of them, but most games, arcade games with a timer built in, it's meant to keep one kid from hogging the sticks, right? They want other players to get a turn to pay them a quarter. But I liked how this game didn't just have a timer where you die. When their level ran too long, the enemies got more aggressive and faster and came at you, you know, at a higher clip. So I don't know what you did to make them just off themselves, but that seems very counter to good arcade game design. Yeah, then
the first time it happened, I was like, that was strange. And then it happened like the next level. I'm like, the heck is with this?
Yeah, that's very strange. Well, you know, I'm bummed you clearly didn't vibe with this one. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I actually enjoyed the sort of competing mechanics of using the fault lines to kill enemies versus your oxygen tank to inflate them and kill them. I found myself having a wide variety of ways to approach any given encounter because, for example, let's say I don't have time to get to a fault line and crack it to make a barrier, I can spear the enemy just to stun them. And if I can isolate an enemy, I can keep hitting that spear button and pump them up. And I'm always a big fan in games where you have to mash a button frantically, you know, to run faster or punch harder, in this case, inflate. I just found the mechanic of making the enemies fall into the ocean, destroying huge chunks of the island all at once, and inflating them to kill them. I was like, I have like all these different methods to defend myself, to come at them. And again, you know, maybe I wouldn't have enjoyed it so much if I wasn't rewinding every time I screwed up. But I thought it was hectic in like a good way. I thought this game was fun.
Did you ever get either the fish or the vegetables?
I speared a fish and I got, I think, just 500 points. The little fish jumped out of the water. Were you wondering what that did?
I was trying. No, I knew what it would do. I couldn't do it. I was never ready. I was never sufficiently prepared for that to occur.
I mean, I don't know if I can take credit for that then, because like it would be like the fish would jump and I'd rewind to position myself to get the fish. And then like the candy bars or whatever. I think it's also just points, right?
Yeah. It's just points, but it's only after you've dropped 3 pieces of land into the ocean.
Right. Okay. Well, so let's talk real quick then about a couple interesting things about the lore here. We never mentioned the cover art, although there's not a ton to say about it. It's just kind of very sort of generic, arcadey, you know, box art design. The Japanese one shows you more what the game actually looks like. But what I thought was worth mentioning is that this subtitle, Dig Dug 2, Trouble in Paradise, Trouble in Paradise is the official subtitle of the game, but it only appears on the North American box art. It's not programmed into the game, and it's not in any other version of the box art. It's just this one sort of isolated incident that sort of stuck.
When was that added to that? Is that original to it? Because I see that like that's copyright 1982 and 1989.
Are you looking at the image right here? Yeah. Oh, you know what? I'll be honest. I'm not sure. Maybe Trouble in Paradise was added later.
Really what I want to know is who ripped off who, because in the late 80s, you also have Revenge of the Nerds for something, Nerds in Paradise.
Oh, yeah, the whole In Paradise trend of 80s titles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that brings me to your beef with the title of the episode, which was, let's remind our listeners, Mustachioed Quarter Munchers. So Dig Dug 2, Mike, was such a departure that it struggled to find success of the first game, which led game designer Yasuhito Nagaoka to create his own sequel to the series without Namco's blessing. And it was really a gamble because he spent a lot of time and a lot of the company's money developing this game that he didn't get permission to develop. He went all the way to test audiences and, like, you know, beta testing, and eventually presented this completed game as Dig Dug 3. And Namco thankfully liked the game, but they didn't want to call it Dig Dug 3. They wanted it to be its own series, which is called Mr. Driller. Does this guy, you know, are you familiar at all, or have you seen Mr. Driller around?
I don't think I have at all. This just looks strange.
So it's, you know, if I don't think I have a screenshot here, but if you want to Google it while I'm talking here, it's very similar to the original Dig Dug, except the difference is that instead of the goal being to dig around and kill all the enemies, your goal is to dig around to the bottom of a stage. And so it's sort of like Tetris in reverse. Tetris, you're trying to keep things from piling up. Mr. Driller, you're trying to dig down to the bottom without getting taken out by an enemy or accidentally crushing yourself. And so Mr. Driller was canonically connected to the Dig Dug series in a Nintendo DS game called Dig Dug Digging Strike. And so this is the Dig Dug protagonist, real name Taizo Hori, which, you know, in Japan, Mike, are you familiar with how you say names differently in Japan?
No.
You say the last name first.
Oh,
so you
okay.
Wouldn't, yeah. Right? So his name is Taizo Hori, but it's pronounced properly in Japan. It'd be Hori Taizo, and Hori Taizo translates to I want to dig. And this guy is canonically the father of Mr. Driller. And our hero, Taizo Hori, in the game is now a divorced conspiracy theorist desperately trying to convince people of his own relevance and former glory. He saved the world multiple times in Dig Dug 1 and Dig Dug 2, but nobody remembers it or knows what he's talking about. And not even his son respects him. And I just think it's so funny that you take this character that was sort of forgotten to the sands of time because the sequel was such a departure, and you make him sort of a deadbeat, irrelevant, older character.
I'm not surprised a character that has a history with pukas is not being believed.
Oh, I'm not smart enough to get your reference. I don't know if you should explain it though. I don't know.
I will choose to. In the Jimmy Stewart movie Harvey, where he has an imaginary giant rabbit friend, as it's described, that character is the rabbit is a puka.
Okay.
That he talks to, and everyone else thinks he's crazy.
This is a deep cut.
I mean, it's a fairly classic movie. It just, but yeah, and so there is a little bit of, and then this has the pukas as a totally not rabbit shaped weird little blobs with goggles.
Oh, you're referring to, okay. Those enemies are called Pukas.
Yes.
And so then is the dragon Fygar?
Yes. I guess that,
fire, dragon, Fygar. Okay, all right. I get it now. Okay, I forgotten the name of the enemies, which are essentially like the Goombas of Dig Dug. So did you have anything else to say about Dig Dug 2 before we move on to our last game?
I will say, when you look at the Japanese cover that you had there,
yeah,
you can see why I'm wondering if they let Island spell something out, because it's clearly showing Island spelling out Dig Dug.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I wish I had an answer for you. I could make up one, because people love to do that on the internet, but I'm not going to. Okay, so let's go to our final game, Burger Time Deluxe. Burger Time Deluxe, let me go to the description on the Nintendo Switch Online Game Boy server. So Game Boy was added earlier this year. And this, actually all these games, I just realized, can be accessed at the basic subscription level. Genesis, Nintendo 64, and Game Boy Advance all require the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack, but Game Boy and NES are included at the base level price of $20 a year. It's really crazy. So here's the description of Burger Time Deluxe. It says, released in 1991 by G-Mode, it says, how fast can you put a burger together? Give Chef Peter Pepper a helping hand to create the ultimate hamburger. Each ingredient is located on a different platform, and you must climb a series of ladders in order to reach them all. Walk across the ingredient to drop it closer to the waiting plate below. Once all the burgers have been completed, you'll be able to move on to the next level, but watch out. Renegade ingredients will stop at nothing to put an end to your cooking days. Dodge them, stun them using pepper, or drop a hamburger ingredient on top of them to stop their chase. If you run out of pepper, look for more to appear around the screen at random, and collect bonus foods like coffee, chocolate, and fries while you wait. It's a nonstop food fight in this classic arcade game. And I don't know, it's just funny that it's like, oh, it's nonstop food fight, but while you wait, you can collect these power-ups. That doesn't sound like nonstop. Let me give you some trivia here about Burger Time. It was published worldwide by Data East, which we will meet again when we do our Joe and Mac episode of Magical Drop 2. And in North America, it was published by Bally Midway. Are you familiar with that company name?
Didn't they do, is it California Speed or something like that?
Yeah, they did a lot of things, you know, Mortal Kombat, a lot of pinball games, Tron, Pac-Man, and the Journey games. If you the band Journey had a game. And this was
totally
original,
thinking a different Journey game, and was like, I'm surprised they had anything to do with that.
Yeah, Journey is also an amazing game on the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4. And, you know, there was also a game based on the band. Two of them, actually.
I need those.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. If I say that it looked like a game from Clarissa Explains It All, would you get the visual I'm talking about?
I would get that and be more intrigued.
Yeah, you got to look into this later.
The last time I played a game that was based off of a band, it was awesome. So
was that Revolution X?
Yes.
Yeah, that game ruled. So Burger Time, bringing it back to Burger Time, was originally released on the Deco cassette system, which was innovative in the arcade industry because it allowed arcade owners to swap out a cassette out of the machine instead of replacing the entire cabinet. Because as you can imagine, takes a lot of physical labor and a lot of cost to swap in an entire arcade machine. Now, you kids listening, you might not know, but arcade machines, it's like, imagine a slot machine in Vegas, but with a screen on. So the Deco, you know, was a real big innovation, but according to this article I read on 8bitcentral.com, the tapes wore out within months of purchase. And so it really made it impossible for arcade, you know, owners to invest too much in this system. And there was 50 games released for the Deco. Burger Time is basically the only one that has survived in any sort of capacity. It just was not a very good catalog. And let's talk about the cover since I have him here. I love the Game Boy cover. It's super like early 90s, colorful, looks like a cartoon. You have all the different enemies, the sour pickles and the mean sausages and the fried eggs. And the character's actually doing what you do in the game. He's dropping giant pieces of hamburger to the lower levels to kind of create it. What do you think of this kind of cartoony cover we're looking at here?
That reminds me of like the cover of every board game that was advertised on TV in like the 100% 90s.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. In fact, if you were to actually look up the chef from Peanut Panic, it's pretty much the exact same design. On the other hand, the Japanese cover is quite strange in that it's just a young lady. What would you guess her age is, Mike?
Let's just say 20, because that's not the thing I'm looking at all.
Well, I would guess she's maybe 10 to 12 years old, and she has a hamburger, and she's got kind of a coy little look on her face. And are you looking at the hamburger in the bottom right corner?
Yeah, I am.
And the fact that the hamburger has a tongue as if it's a mouth?
Yeah.
Yeah, super strange, which is not anything like that never happens in this game. The hamburger is not an enemy. The hamburger is the goal, or the hamburgers are your weapons to drop onto enemies below them. So super, super strange. The got some trivia here for you. It was said that game designer Akio Nakamura came up with this concept for Burger Time while eating a hamburger and thinking about the process of making it. Mike, I have something to say about that. I'm wondering if you can guess what it's going to be.
I mean, the fact that he's thinking about the process implies he doesn't understand how it's made, which explains a lot.
Okay, that wasn't what I was going for, but that's funny too. In this game, you play as a tiny chef, and you need to run across the pieces of the hamburger and knock them down to the level below it. So like if you run across the top bun, then the bun will fall onto the tomatoes and then it can set off a chain reaction. The tomato falls onto the patty falls onto the bottom bun. It's like, did this guy make hamburgers by running across? It even occurred to me as a kid playing this game that this is incredibly unsanitary. You're essentially cooking with your feet, right?
I think there's also the question of, are the villains necessarily things you want to be eating? Like, is that good? Is the burger better? Because, like, you can kill them that way. But, like, if I found out you killed a fly that happened to be in your kitchen while making the burger, I would not go, good job, have 100 points. I would ask right. for a new burger.
Absolutely. And, you know, I didn't even think about it until you just mentioned it. But perhaps the reason that the food is, like, you know, the antagonist is that you have only one way of killing enemies in this game, and that's dropping giant pieces of hamburger onto them. So, you know, maybe we're led to believe that if I squish the fried egg with the cheese, for example, well, that burger now has fried egg between the patty and the cheese, right? Like, I just made that hamburger freaking delicious. Have you ever had a hamburger with a fried egg?
No.
Oh my gosh, you are missing out. Okay, so my favorite burger, and I want to know yours, by the way, my favorite burger of all time is a place called Cheeseburger in Paradise. There's one in Oahu and there's one in Vegas.
Was that a sequel to Cheeseburger, which had a totally different gameplay?
Well done. You get one of those every episode, Mike. You're good at this. Cheeseburger in Paradise, though, Hawaiian cheeseburgers are truly phenomenal. And you don't even need to go the whole teriyaki pineapple route. Just whatever you get at Cheeseburger in Paradise. Oh, my mouth is watering. What's your favorite burger? You're a burger boy, right? You like burgers.
I mean, I do, but almost all the time, that burger is a plain burger with just ketchup.
Oh, you don't go for like the frilly, like the new stuff, the hip new thing. Oh, we've got kale on this one.
No, like I go very plain with them. The one exception I make on that, because I tried it because of where I was and it was amazing, was on the Big Island of Hawaii, where actually it was a slice of grilled pineapple and a slice of grilled spam on a burger.
I've heard of the grilled spam. I've never tried it.
That
because I hated spam as a kid. Like my dad would always like, you know, whip it out to make a spam sandwich. I could have vomited. I thought it was disgusting. Sorry, Pops, if you're listening to this. But but so you like fried spam or grilled spam?
Certainly in that form, it was delicious.
Okay.
Tangentially, that is also how I discovered that Hawaii has mongoose, because I was eating and some weird thing ran by and it was like, hey, what the heck was that? It's like, oh, that's a mongoose. I'm like, I did, since when were those wild in Hawaii? And those were introduced there.
I would not have known that either. A good tip. Now we know to look for it. So
yeah,
I don't know where else to fit this in, but I just want to talk about the commercials I made you watch. Pause this right now, everybody. Go to YouTube and just look up Burger Time in television commercial.
We will put links in notes if we figure out how to do that.
There we go. Yeah, click the link below. It's creepy. Like one of those things that has this couple drive up to a fast food joint and they place their order, and then through the speaker system, you hear the chef begging for help as it cuts to the inside of the restaurant and he's being chased around. And the cartoon one, kind of similar premise, not quite as disturbing, but I loved the puns. The game is said to feature food that constantly disagrees with you, including hot dogs with a taste for revenge, eggs that don't turn over easy, and truly sour pickles. I'm like, okay, someone had fun making this, good on you.
On the second one, I also kind of enjoy the music that it's got going with it.
It's like Burger Time. Like everything had to have a theme song back then. Can we talk about this cutscene? Can you see this on the screen? I totally forgot this was even there. But this game starts off with a cutscene of, a rival restaurant owner, the owner of Newton Donut, sending a sausage to come and get you. And what's weird to me about that is, like, are donuts and burgers in competition with one another? Like, I've never been craving a donut and got a burger instead. You know what I mean?
I've heard of some place doing that, and I can't remember if that's a real place or, like, a state fair where rules to food don't apply anymore.
I mean, there was a great episode of the Boondocks where they make cheeseburgers with Krispy Kreme donuts. But, it's funny that this little cutscene reminds me of a cartoon show. And I'm willing to guess, Mike, you can guess what cartoon show I'm talking about.
I mean, I'm willing to guess both because I had the same thought and because I've seen the slide.
Yeah. Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
Bob's Burger has an episode basically devoted to Burger Time. It's called Burger Boss. And the plot is that Bob's rival, Jimmy Pesto, he owns the Italian restaurant across the street. He comes in and he plays Burger Boss, which is, their version of Burger Time, all the way down to like the enemies being condiments. And he enters the high score name as Bob Sucks, B-O-B-S-U-X. And so then Bob goes on a quest to regain his childhood skills at Burger Boss so he can top the high score and, remove it from the leaderboard. So I thought that was sort of cute. What did you think about Burger Time Deluxe as a game? Like, how'd you think of playing it?
I was underwhelmed because I guess completing the burgers just doesn't feel satisfying. And beating the food doesn't actually feel like it's accomplishing much. It didn't click to me, and I don't really know what needs to be different for that.
I mean, I totally agree with you. You don't get a very strong sense of satisfaction. I wish there was some way to sort of keep the chain reaction going. That's the game when it's at its best, is when you drop the bun onto the patty and then the patty drops down to the bun below it. And, if you time it right, you could snake in and out and just run over one piece after the other. But my real issue with this game is that I hate it when games make me feel helpless. And your only means of defending yourself is to throw pepper at your enemies, but you only get like two or three tosses. And yes, you can pick up more, as the game description said. But when you die and respawn, because, you ran out of pepper and the sausages came and killed you, you don't respawn with more pepper. And so it's like, okay, I'm back, but I'm just as helpless as I was before. And you can't really tell by the picture here, but a lot of these levels, like, you get it stuck in dead ends. There's shelves with just one ladder leading to it and a big piece of burger. So yeah, I go down there, I get the piece of burger, but now there's an enemy coming down the ladder and there's nothing to do but wait for death. Every time a game puts me in that situation where I'm saying, well, that stinks, it just kind of empties my fun bucket a little bit. And there's no real variety except for the level structure. There's no boss enemies that come and get you. I underwhelmed, I think, is the perfect word for it.
Yeah, and I think there's probably an element of this that, because it does exist, is this in color might have been a bit livelier.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny sort you of
the
trade.
Yeah, and sort of the trade-off is, okay, well, yeah, this is only in black and green, I guess. Is that what I'm call that?
The Game Boy, yeah. Well, it's really just in black, and the green is the color of the screen.
I mean, yeah, usually when things are in black and white, they didn't print the black and white, so.
Okay, well said.
And kind of the trade-off you're making there is, okay, this is going to look less great, but it's portable, but I am playing this hooked up to a TV, so it's kind of, it's now lost its one advantage in that trade-off.
You know, it's funny, I just had such a brain fart. I was like, well, Mike, the Switch is portable, so it's still portable. It's like, well, yeah, but we can have color on the go in 23. Yeah, I don't even think this is that great of a game. My mom really loved it. She was really good at it. But, you know, this is not even the best way to play this game. Because like you said, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, if you look on the right there, the in television screenshot, I wanted to eat those burgers. I would fantasize about eating a giant hamburger, which might explain the person I've become. I did not want to eat anything on the Game Boy screen. It's just that sickly green. It just does not do well with like food-based visuals. And yeah, you know, you can see there's like a bit of a background to this, but...
Well, I think it's even... Know. Here's my question is... So three parts of this are easy, which is the top and bottom parts of the bun and the meat. I don't know what's on that burger.
Oh, the Game Boy one?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think you got... Well, you'd have the bun... the hamburger, and then you have like your gray slab, right? Like, you know, every burger you have has a gray slab. I don't know. I assumed it was like tomato or cheese.
Aren't the tomatoes what's chasing you? Or that
no, sausages. Those are sausages.
Not the other thing, the round thing.
That's a fried egg.
Oh, that's an egg. Okay.
Yeah, the visuals aren't super clear in this one. Well, so I wanted to explain myself with the whole mustachioed quarter muncher, you know, sort of angle. Should I save that till after our critique, or should we do that first?
Yeah, let's go for that.
Okay, so Mario, right, obviously a mustache. In fact, his mustache was a big gameplay innovation, or I shouldn't say gameplay, I should say graphics innovation. You know, the idea of adding those pixels to simulate a mustache created a face shape that had never been seen before in video games. So that one's a slam dunk. Burger Time. I know what you're thinking, Mike. You're looking at the Burger Time box here. That guy don't have a mustache.
He also very clearly didn't have one in the commercial.
Yeah, okay. But in my defense, Burger Boss has a mustache from Bob's Burgers. And take a look at these two things. This is the original deco cabinet on the right-hand side. With Peter Pepper is the name of the chef in this game. Kind of flirtatious, wouldn't you say? The way he's beckoning the cheese.
You're hardly one to talk.
We're not gonna go there. And then Burger
Wait,
Time.
Why are there limes lemons involved in this?
I mean, the less we ask, the better. I think. I mean, because
else on there I'm fine with, but the lemon.
Okay, well, so can we also acknowledge that if you look in the top left, that is clearly based on the color a sliced cucumber and not actually turned into a pickle yet? Like, that's not what pickles look like when you cut them. Although I guess that could just be a color thing. And then on the left there is Peter Pepper in Burger Time World Tour. So, you know, at least a couple iterations of this character had a mustache. Which then leads me to my great shame of lumping Dig Dug in with other mustachioed quarter munchers. Because do you see where I went wrong here?
I'm honestly surprised that you were even able to establish facial hair for Dig Dug. So honestly, you got further than I thought.
Yeah. In the Nintendo DS release that ties it to Mr. Driller, he has a goatee, which... In frantically preparing for this episode, I could have sworn also was accompanied with a mustache, but facial hair quarter munchers, that just doesn't have a good ring to it. So, you know what? We're all a work in progress. Do you have anything else to say about any of these games before we critique them and give us our Nintendo or Nintendo rankings?
I don't think I do.
Okay, so let's go for it then. At the end of each episode, we establish whether or not the games are a Nintendo or a Nintendon't. So let's go through the order in which we talked about them. Mario Brothers NES. What are you thinking, Mike? Nintendo or Nintendon't?
I'm going to say Nintendo for like 20 minutes to see where it came from and then move on to better things.
Yeah, it doesn't have a very big investment, you know, of your time, that is. It certainly, you know, won't take up your whole afternoon. And it is sort of an interesting curio as, you know, one of the original iterations of the character. So I don't know how to categorize this. And I wanted to get your academic opinion on it, because I think I have to say it's a Nintendon't. As much as I sort of enjoyed Mario Brothers, I want to show you something. Do you know what this is? I'm showing him a screenshot of well, Mario Brothers.
Not particularly.
Well, if you had to describe what you're looking at.
It's the exact same sort of level, except we have a red spiky turtle, which clearly communicates that you cannot jump on them, even if you yeah. think you can.
So these are screenshots from the version of Mario Brothers that's included in the Super Mario Advance series. They re-released Mario 2, Mario 3, and Mario 4, and every one of those cartridges came with a remake of Mario Brothers. And, you know, the graphics are better, the sounds are better. There's a run button, there's a crouch button, which I can't really figure out the purpose of.
Fireball.
And it has you know, I don't know if it actually got me under, but I'll definitely try that. And it also has four players at once. So do I say that this is a Nintendon't because there's a better way to play it?
I think so.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Or I kind of think it's on its own. Would you play it or not? And I kind of
I wouldn't play that version of it. I'd play this version of it. It's much better.
All right, then make your decision.
Then it's a Nintendon't, I say. Yeah, it's a Nintendon't just because it doesn't. I mean, so it's a Nintendo if you don't have the expansion pack. Because if you're not paying the extra $50 a year, you don't get to play Game Boy Advance games. But so, yeah, it's a Nintendo, but just know there's a better way to play it if you just go to the Game Boy Advance and select Super Mario Advance. How about Dig Dug 2 Trouble in Paradise? I'm going to guess that's a Nintendon't for you.
Yeah, I think I've got to go with that it doesn't find the right spot for me.
And especially being a fan of the original, you couldn't get over the differences of it. So I am like literally in the exact opposite camp. I am not a fan of the original Dig Dug. I am not good at it, but I would recommend Dig Dug 2. I think that's a Nintendo. I actually might go back to this one and see if I can get through the whole thing, especially with the ability to rewind. I think it's really fun to just figure out all the different fault lines and, you know, just sort of try to control the chaos on the screen.
Yeah, and the deaths were definitely a limitation there for me, is because I'd have to start back over.
And then finally, Burger Time. I venture to say we're both a Nintendon't on that one.
You venture correctly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's better versions of the game, and the game itself was, I don't know, kind of shaky to begin with. All right. Well, you know what, Mike? This has been fun. It's always fun talking to you, and you find a way to make even games like Burger Time and Dig Dug kind of cringeworthy. I mean that as a compliment. So please like, follow, and subscribe if you think we've deserved it. Next week, join us for our Sega fighting games episode. We're going to be diving into two hugely popular gaming franchises with Street Fighter II Champion Edition and the Sega Genesis version of Virtua Fighter 2. We're going to put those head-to-head and see which one reigns supreme. So thanks again for listening. This has been the Old Switcheroo talking gaming retro with Mike and JMO.
I've been Mike.
And I've been JMO. Game on, everybody.